The lives you save may include your own. For free vegetarian recipes, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510. Thank you.
Hello, car of teenagers. If you don't mind, I'm only going to broadcast this out of the speaker on the passenger side so we can talk in private. Okay, now that we're alone, what's with your friend's driving? Is he always this reckless? You should say something, something witty. Make a joke about the airbag or something. Hearses are funny, too. You could make a joke about hearses. Driver, just so you know, we're totally not talking about you. He suspects nothing.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and SpeakUpOrElse.com.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 6 p.m. Time, once again, for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
How you doing?
Fine.
It's Christmas Eve. Can you imagine? It's Christmas Eve, and here we are in the studio. And I guess, you know, this is one of those years where we kind of get screwed on the on the scheduling, because we have to do a show Christmas Eve. We do a show on a different radio station on Christmas Day. Then next week, as it happens, New Year's Eve is also on a Tuesday, and New Year's Day is on the Wednesday. So we have to radio on all four of those days, each one of which is considered a holiday by many people. But not for us, because we must show up and make sure that everything goes smoothly. And so far, everything has gone smoothly. No catastrophes yet. We're 8 minutes into the show. Of course, 7 minutes of that was taken up by our intro. But, hey, you know, we're open to the challenge. And plus, we're here for our listeners, because we have to be. It's an obligation we take very seriously. The last time this happened, the last time we were scheduled this way, where we did a show on Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, Christmas Day, and New Year's Day, was back in 2013. I looked it up. And, in fact, I don't know if you remember this. That was the eve of the Cannabis Bowl. Remember the Cannabis Bowl? That was when Seattle Seahawks played
Broncos.
The Denver Broncos. The two states that had legalized marijuana in the Super Bowl. And, you know, I started a campaign to call it the Cannabis Bowl, but, of course, it didn't go anywhere because I'm not a celebrity, so I can't make things trend. But, you know, if somebody had said that had a little blue check next to their name on Twitter, that would have been what it was called. But I still think it's a good name.
If they got around to that this year in New York could have been included.
That's right. Well, no, not with our teams, though. Have you checked? Between the New York Jets, the New York Giants, and the Buffalo Bills, we don't have what it takes to make it to the Super Bowl.
Well, I can't help them with that, but I can definitely advocate for the New York legislature getting around to it, which they say they're going to get around to it next year, maybe. I saw Cuomo soundbiting about it.
If Democrats get out of their own way, yeah, maybe. Don't get me started. I'm just...
Well, we'll talk about it. This isn't the cannabis episode.
No, it's not.
I'm sorry.
But anyway, that was the last time it happened. You were in Seattle. I was in New York. I talked to you on the phone.
Yeah, we talked.
Yeah, and it was a good show. It was a good show.
Was it?
This, 6 years ago, yes.
And I don't have any awful memories of it,
no.
So it mustn't have been.
No, it was it was pretty good. This year, though, here we are, both in the studio here at the lonely campus of the State University at Stony Brook. And it's peaceful. It's nice.
It's empty. The parking lot's everywhere. There's it's a ghost.
Yeah, that's right.
Ghost.
We took a bus.
Yeah, well, shuttle.
And that was empty, too. And, it's you know, people are doing their Christmas Eve things, which include all kinds of getting together with family, going to church, going to a bar. Take your pick. Which shall we do? And, of course, people who don't observe at all and just go home and watch Netflix or something.
Some of those things are the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're a snowplow driver, well, you've got the night off as well.
It's been warm.
It's been too warm. I wonder, you know, I keep hearing that damn song, I'm Dreaming of a White Christmas, and it just upsets me more and more because it just seems that's all we do is dream about it. It never actually happens. And I seem to recall bemoaning the fact that we don't get the amount of snow that I remember getting as a kid. But then I wonder, does everybody remember it differently? Do they think there was more snow when they were a kid because, well, they were kids and snow was a big deal then? Or is there really less and less snow every year? I know there wasn't snow last year or the year before that at this time, but I do remember as a kid, I'm pretty sure I remember snow on Christmas, and everyone else seems to remember that too. So I just wonder, is it really that bad? Is it really getting that much warmer where we get less and less snow? I remember traveling in Europe, and we would go to the Chaos Congress, which apparently we're not going to this year because it begins in 2 days. But that takes place in Germany. I remember snow-covered ground in Berlin when it took place there. I haven't seen snow in Germany in December in quite a while. We were in Iceland last winter. There was no snow on the ground. Yeah, they had some on top of mountains, but they didn't have it where you weren't on a mountain. Iceland, for God's sake. And that was in January. So I'm a little worried here, you know, about the future of winter.
Yeah, it's like springtime weather right after the solstice.
And before as well. And everyone's saying, oh, it's nice weather. No, it's not nice weather. It's wrong weather. This should not be.
Yeah, that annoys me the most is people bemoaning bad weather, quote, bad weather, and how nice it is.
Uh-huh. I think it's bad weather when it's warm in the winter.
I just find those, yeah, I'm with you. I find those characterizations just irritating and insulting.
It is insulting. It's you know, it's all in the eye of the beholder. Whether something is nice or not nice, bad or good. And if you want that kind of weather in December, go to Atlanta. Go to Florida. You know, go even further south if you need to.
I think they already do go to Florida.
Yeah, but don't bring it up here. You know, this is New York. This is one of the northern states. I know in the northern part of New York they have snow. That's great. But we deserve it down here as well. So whoever can help make this happen, and I think it's all of us, By fixing climate change, that would be one step. Let's.
It's not the climate episode either.
No. Well, it's almost the end of the year, though. It's almost at that stage.
Yeah, the programming on a lot of networks seems to be on autopilot, and it's all the like year in review.
Yeah,
you know how they do the specials and everything in the run up to the new year, and basically to leave no one at the wheel, no one at the helm, so everybody at the broadcast places can go and enjoy their holiday.
Yeah, unlike here at WUSB, there is nobody in control at most of the networks.
Yeah, no automation.
You can tell,
nope.
Because if news breaks out, and you can hear the news on Twitter a lot of times, it'll be hours and hours before the so-called news networks even get it, because there's nobody there, nobody doing anything.
All the more reason to stay tuned to WUSB Stony Brook and keep abreast of local and community content and breaking news, especially
right.
weather.
Mm-hmm.
Especially weather. If we get a sudden blast, a snow squall again. Yeah, we had two snow squalls.
We had a snow squall last Wednesday. That's true. So what that was basically a bunch of disorganized snowflakes. I sound like a conservative. No, real snowflakes. You know, the kind that come out of the sky. It kind of descended upon us, and you know, twirled around for a bit, and then that was it. Nothing really stuck on the ground. But it was kind of fun, you know, for what it was.
It could happen again.
It could happen again. But I want more. You know, I remember sleigh riding. Yeah, you know, I didn't make this up. When I was a kid, every winter we went sleigh riding. I remember going skiing on Bald Hill.
Toboggans.
Yeah. So that we talked about this last year, actually. I remember that. But Bald Hill is where our antenna is.
Okay,
In Selden, and there used to be a ski slope there.
I'm going to say it. If it snows, like, a lot.
Let it snow. Let it snow. That's how the song goes.
About investing in some snowshoes.
Okay.
I was talking about that.
Those big web-type shoes?
Yeah, you can fashion them out of sticks.
All right.
But that's a little bit more rustic, you know? And if the snow is something that's a little bit more, you know, more consistent, more predictable, you know, something we reliably have, I would do that. I would get snowshoes.
Where would you get snowshoes, pray tell?
Well, I don't know. Like I said, you could fashion them out of twigs and twine.
Mm-hmm.
Twigs and twine. But I could also purchase, you know. I guess you might find more pride in building them yourself.
Speaking of purchasing, did you want to share with the folks the lesson that you learned about purchasing items in brick and mortar versus online over the past few days? I believe you had.
What, that everything's like $10 less expensive?
Yeah, but you had the opportunity to get something that you wanted, and you chose instead to get something a different way online, and it turned out to take longer for you to get it that way.
It was still cheaper, though.
It was a little cheaper. It was a little cheaper, but
what is this scolding tone? You sound like you're admonishing me over this.
Well, yes, I am, but I'm also going to admonish myself because at equal time. Because the same thing happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted you to have a chance to tell your story first.
Well, it's not much of a story. Our lost wallet story is probably better, but
Oh, that was a good story.
If you want me to, well, just there you go. Let it, you know, be in the back.
The show's
of people's
a quarter minds. Over, so we need to tell these stories. And by the way, listeners,
it's not much.
It's Christmas Eve, and we'd like to hear from you as well. If you want to call, you know what? I'll tell you what. If you intend to call the radio show a little bit later on. Call the radio show now so we can see the light up, and then we'll know, okay, we're going to stop now and ask for calls and not feel like idiots when nobody calls. Does that make sense?
Even if it doesn't, I'm fine with it so we can move on with the story.
Right. So if I see, like, you know, two or three lights light up on the phone when I say, give a call to 631-632-9872, if you intend to call when we ask for phone calls in about 15 minutes or so, that'll make a much smoother transition. This is what good radio is all about.
Everybody is, they're on their, like, third glass of eggnog. They and can't even comprehend what you're asking them to do.
All the better. But if you can understand numbers and dial numbers, 631-632-9872, if I see a few lights light up, then I'll know that there's a good chance those people will call back when I ask for calls for real. So this is kind of like a test run. And you can be anywhere in the world. And if you're somewhere other than the U.S. or Canada, you have to dial 1 as a country code. And you probably have to dial 1 even if you're inside the country. So, okay, no lights have lit up so far, but it takes time for the signal to get out.
What are they calling about again? Just in
general?
Well,
I guess, yeah, that's a good point.
Recount ordering gifts?
Tales of Christmas Eve's past or basically reflections on the year that has gone by or maybe predictions for the future maybe just kind of a critique of what we're doing. Something like that.
That's a good placeholder. Maybe we'll add to that.
I think, though, everyone's too busy out celebrating and making merry to worry about us. So that's telling me right now, you know what, don't bother in 13 minutes or so when I consider doing this again. So, you know, unless we see lights light up, we're not even going to try.
Does eggnog really have eggs in it?
You know, you're asking the wrong person for that, but probably.
Are they all chicken eggs, or could you have, like, ostrich eggs?
You see, this is why I don't answer questions, because there's always another question.
Maybe a listener could tell us.
I see there's one call. That's good. Thank you, person. Don't hang up. Don't hang up yet, because we want to give the opportunity for a second person to call and know that it's a second person and not you again or you still. 631-632-9872. I'll tell you what. If I see one other light up, that'll tell me there's more than one person out there. You see, that person already hung up. People don't follow instructions. Why is that?
Don't get too fixated on it. They'll sort it out. They're probably just testing the number. They didn't think that actually. They try to hang up. And
okay, there's one call now. So if somebody else calls 631-632-9872, then I'll see two lights light up. That'll tell me we have at least two listeners out there, which will make me feel a little bit like I'm not wasting my life by coming to this place. You know, taking one of these lonely buses, and they hung up again. Look at that. We have this antagonistic relationship already, and I haven't even picked up the phone.
Don't commiserate. We'll do that at the bar. I mean, church later.
The bar / church.
Whatever.
Why don't they mix those two things together? Do you know how much better they would both be for?
Can you imagine sermons with, like?
I would go.
Yeah.
I would be in church every day if necessary.
Yeah.
All right. Well. Yeah, so what were we discussing?
Packages.
Packages, yes. Oh, right, so...
It was a scheduling thing. That's mainly what happened, is that I could have bought it at a brick-and-mortar store. I liked what I got. I had more selection by ordering online.
But could you go and run your hands over it and pick it up and feel it? You couldn't do that online.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I'm happy that I paid less money overall. I have e-commerce guilt.
Okay, that's a thing.
I'm thinking that, yeah, we're still workshopping the term, but yeah, e-commerce guilt. I know guilt about a lot of things is pretty common in the lexicon these days, so we're trying to figure out exactly what terms to use or create, rather, for that. But point is, I chose this method, then I thought it was... It was going to be arriving the same day because of all of the, you know, all the traffic. Well, lots of people are ordering things. Turns out it was very early in the morning when I ordered.
You ordered it on a Sunday.
So when it said tomorrow, that means it's like not the day, but the day.
Sunday doesn't count.
I woke up
Sunday
the next
does
day.
Not count. But, you know, apparently it does count, though, because I saw a lot of mail trucks on Sunday.
There were, yeah.
Actual U.S. Postal Service, and they looked like they were making regular rounds on Sunday.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was weird.
And there's a lot of rental trucks. I know, I think some of the carriers are supplementing their fleet.
Yeah, you saw what? What was it, a Penske truck? That
yeah.
was actually a UPS truck the other day.
There's a bunch of them. They're all, like, they've got all their temporary hires and seasonal hires and, you know, extra equipment.
But the point is, you could have gotten your item on Sunday. You could have gone to the store and bought it then, but instead...
I didn't have time, though.
You didn't have time, and then you expected it yesterday, and you were very upset when it wasn't there, and then it showed up today. So that amount that you saved by buying it online cost you 2 days. Just saying, you know, for the sake of the brick-and-mortar people out there. Sometimes it doesn't pay off. Now, I'll tell you my story. I basically bought something that I expected to show up. And, in fact, it did show up. We have these amazing things on campus called Amazon Lockers. I don't know if they have them anywhere else, but I think it's a Stony Brook thing. We only have them here? Yes. Yeah, this is the only place in the country that has these things. And you go – no, it's amazing. You got to check this out. You go there. You get a little email on your phone, right, and you click the orange button, all right, and the orange button changes, and it turns into one of these QR code things, which is too complex to explain here, so I won't try. What you do is you then get in your car, and you drive to the Amazon locker location here on campus. And, again, it's the only place we can do it. So if you're in Texas, it's going to be inconvenient.
What if you have to take the bus, though?
You could take the bus.
Like we do.
And then you could walk over to the building, which I am not at liberty to tell you where it is on campus. You have to find that out and pay a fee to get the information. But when you get that information, you know where it is, and you can go there anytime. Well, the thing is, you can't go there anytime because when I went there it was closed, even though online it said this place is open. Amazon said that the Stony Brook Amazon locker thing was open until 8 p.m. This was on Friday. And guess what? It closed at 6 p.m. And there was a note on the door saying, hey, we're closed because it's you know, we're done with our finals on campus here. And guess what? We're not going to be open tomorrow or Sunday either. Yeah. So Amazon lied to me online, and instead of getting what I could have gotten at a brick-and-mortar store on Friday, I had to wait until Monday. Yeah, and I didn't save anything because it cost the same thing at a brick-and-mortar store. So I did that for convenience, and I really outsmarted myself. So think twice. Think twice before you just buy things online by default. Sometimes it's good to walk around a store and rummage. Hey, we went to the mall yesterday.
It was fun.
No, it wasn't fun, but it's, you know, I don't recommend malls so much. I recommend mom-and-pop shops, but we did go to the mall just for the experience, and we always go to the mall to pick up calendars.
Yeah,
that's
there's certain things you can't replace. There's where's the calendar kiosk, you know, elsewhere? Where but the mall?
Once a year, I go to the mall to buy calendars. That's literally all I do in the mall, and it's the same calendar kiosk. But you can't.
It's the same freak show at the mall, though.
It's the same guy, and it is a freak show in the mall. It totally is. You walk past that Apple store, it's like these people need help. They need someone to break the glass so they can escape. They're all just kind of standing there, and I don't know what they're doing. It's almost sad, but it's more funny than sad. We'll get letters. We'll get people that are offended that we dare to criticize, but. I don't know. There's something about that place that you just have to walk past quickly. But yeah, the calendars, because you can't get a cat calendar online that you know is the right one unless you actually hold it in your hands and see how big it is and how it feels, how heavy and what kind of pictures it has.
So I got a calendar with wolves.
You got a wolf calendar. I got a cat calendar. That says it all right there. So. Yeah, that's it. That's our mall experience. But there's plenty of brick-and-mortar places I would suggest going to.
Why brick-and-mortar? I mean, what about places that are like studs and drywall, you know, like sheetrock?
I guess you could do that,
why
too.
Why is brick-and-mortar always the way you say it?
Because brick holds up to weather. Brick is strong.
What about slab-up concrete, huh? Prefabricated slab-up, you know?
I'm not saying you can't do that. I'm just saying brick and mortar is the traditional way that stores are built. There's a reason for that.
Hmm.
I don't know about the mortar so much, but definitely the brick.
Well, what I was going to mention is if people are calling later at the appropriate time, maybe they could tell us what kind of calendar they got.
If they remember to get a calendar. You still have a week to go before before you, you get a calendar. But yeah, that's the experiences that we had with
what else is going on trying to buy things.
What's going on?
Did you hear about this psychopath in Washington? It's like
I've been hearing about this
crazy lawmaker.
Wait, Washington
What's
State.
His name Micah Lee, or
you mean the domestic terrorist in Washington State? Yeah, tell us about that.
I wish I didn't have an article. I wondered, but I did. I've been following that. Apparently, he's all but got a. I think there's a legislative investigation about him. But he's essentially, it is alleged to have been, and there's an independent investigation. It's 108 pages, and the Times did a pretty good in-depth story on him and included that document. So you can download this private investigation or other kind of report. But essentially, it seems that he's alleged to have been involved in the, do you remember the Bundy standoffs?
Yeah.
And there were a couple of them. There's one in Arizona at one point, or New Mexico, and then there were a couple others. And essentially, he's from Eastern Washington. He's in favor of this, and I think represents Spokane, and is in favor of this 51st state, this concept of a liberty being the 51st state, and there's just all this this other sort of extreme points of view, basically to install a religious or Christian government. And he's adopted a lot of like conspiratorial stuff, and it's a harbinger of these ideologies working their way into people with, you know, in positions of power.
Well, his name is Matt Shea. He's a state representative. And according to a report, investigators have obtained evidence that Representative Shea, as a leader of the Patriot Movement, planned, engaged in, and promoted a total of three armed conflicts of political violence against the United States government in three states outside the state of Washington over a three-year period to include 2014, 2015, and 2016. I can't say I'm surprised, but wow.
Me either.
You know what I'm surprised about is that this is getting attention. That
I'm glad
he's being called
is.
A domestic terrorist. Because what do you call it? What do you call it when it's an armed takeover of government buildings and people get wounded or killed?
These are like secessionists, and they want to like or secede from a state into something else. They want to basically bifurcate Washington State, which I'm not really for at all.
Uh-huh.
It already is politically in a lot of ways. They want basically all of Eastern Washington and to create some kind of theocratic state government. But I'm not surprised because a lot of that stuff festers out there, and the Times article goes into it, talks about the sort of remote areas of the Northwest Inland Territories, and this is something I know a lot about. I mean, just having grown up, I didn't grow up in Eastern Washington, but I'm just really familiar with how rural it can get. I worked with the Forest Service on a bunch of projects, and basically there's a huge suspicion when the Forest Service does anything with people's land out there.
Yeah, like put out fires.
Right, but, you know, if they want you to evacuate or something, there's people that will stand off, do like little mini standoffs with the Forest Service, and a lot of that has to do with sort of libertarian attitudes, and you get that sort of remoteness and disdain for coastal elites, and in the case of Washington, like the Western Washington sort of Seattle liberal power structures that are believed to be at play, and you know, it, something that rivals the more conservative, and you get that to sort of combine and foment with religious stuff, and you get this kind of movement, and it's kind of frightening.
Yeah, well, I'll say it's frightening, especially since really nothing that I see such people standing for is being threatened. Religion is not being threatened. Their land is not being threatened. There's all these perceived threats that don't actually amount to anything. But what's really kind of crazy about all this is that this guy is channeling Trump to defend himself. He says, like we are seeing with our president, this is a sham investigation meant to silence those of us who stand up against attempts to disarm and destroy our great country. I will not back down. I will not give in. I will not resign. This is a state representative in Washington state, domestic terrorist. This is, it boggles my mind.
Yeah, I would also mention there's a pamphlet he sort of made, which is like the greatest hits of religious sort of rationales for I don't know, cultural or social changes. And basically he handed out this pamphlet that supports various basically hateful ideologies and refers to basically of any categories of humans, you know, that don't believe or they're non-believers or any like sort of minority groups that are not sort of part of this religious hegemony, all the males should be killed. And this kind of biblical language was distributed. And they're defending the pamphlet as, oh, these are just contextual references to theological texts that just help people kind of put what we're saying in context. And I'm just like, get out of here with that. Like, you're basically advocating stuff that is just wholly against the actual theological case you're making. And I mean, I know there's a real knee-jerk reaction to secularism in general. It's very popular, and the church and many faith groups are really really quick to, they're really sensitive to the sort of secularization and that term's thrown around a lot. But I think that they should be a little bit more concerned with their own faiths being exploited as vehicles for hate. I think that's a much greater threat. So anyway, this story kind of disturbed me, but it caught my eye.
Hate isn't necessarily something that goes against their principles, and that's what worries me. It's just all the hatred and hostility that's being directed. Yeah, it comes from both sides, but you know, this is particularly troublesome because of the power that these people have, and just how it's not based in any real facts.
Well, and so much of it is used as a guise to channel the messages without actually saying it overtly. And this is evident in a lot of, like, the dog whistling and other things from the political rhetoric. But really, there's a lot of just like this pamphlet he was distributing, and a lot of the other stuff is really meant to give shelter to that hate under the auspices of religious freedom or the opposite, which is, you know, protecting from religious oppression, but
really,
also speech.
I'm really sick of hearing about religious freedom allowing you to act against other people. You know, like people who say, my religious freedom says I should not treat gay people equally. Well, yeah, okay, fine. Then believe in your religion, but if you want to operate in society, if say you're, you know, one of these bakers that refuses to bake cakes for certain weddings they don't approve of, you know what? You're in the wrong line of work. You should not be doing that. If you're refusing service to somebody based on race, religion, sexual preference, no, you're not going to keep doing it, period. It has to be enforced. There are plenty of things. You can be hateful. You can be ignorant. You can follow all kinds of different religions, and you can do that with all the freedom you want, but you can't use it against other people. And that we need to double down on that, because it's just being used way too much, and the current regime in our country is giving that strength. Now, there was something really good that happened in New York that we didn't get a chance to talk about. And that was the Department of Motor Vehicles allowing people who are undocumented to get driver's licenses. And I wasn't expecting this kind of a response, but literally thousands and thousands of people lined up at the Department of Motor Vehicle offices all over the place. Long Island, no exception. They waited hours in long lines that snaked outside the offices for an opportunity to apply for a driver's license. They lined up as early as 4 a.m. despite the cold and rain, as that new state law that permits immigrants here without documentation to obtain licenses. To me, that was just a very emotional thing. And many, many people saw it that way. The immigrants said the basic things like driving their children to school, driving to doctor's appointments, won't be nerve-wracking activities for them any longer because they were constantly worried they'd be pulled over by police. They would still be driving. They just would be driving illegally, and now they can drive legally. And what is the harm in that? What is the harm in people being allowed to drive legally, to be able to pay for their licenses, be able to pay for insurance? These are good things. Well, not if you listen to our hateful representative Lee Zeldin, who said today was another disastrous day for the rule of law in New York. Illegal immigrants in the state can now get New York State driver's licenses. The awful policies in Albany on so many fronts are a brutal warning shot for America of just how bad one-part Dem rule would be in D.C. come 2021. He ran out of space on Twitter, but that guy is just so ignorant, so hateful, such an embarrassment to Long Island. Unfortunately, many, many people agree with him and think that it's somehow a threat to us that immigrants without documentation are driving cars legally. Hey, let me ask you guys something. Is it legal to feed an illegal immigrant? I mean, you know, you're giving them strength. You know, you're allowing them to continue doing what they're doing, which is being here without the documents that you want them to have. Oh, my God. How are the rest of us going to survive?
No, these people would deny them oxygen if they could.
It's, where do you draw the line? This has got nothing to do with immigration. This has to do with being able to live in a place that you happen to be in. We've never, ever run into problems like this when we travel to other countries. And if we are in a particular place where we are not citizens, we're treated with respect. People don't question us. People don't demand to see our documentation. They don't demand that we not engage in certain legal activities. No, we are treated with respect, and we are welcomed, and that's how we should be treating other people. Now, the whole documentation, immigration thing, that is a different conversation. It's got nothing to do with driving. It's got nothing to do with using a credit card. It's got nothing to do with eating. It's got nothing to do with just living day-to-day life. We need to open up and do what Americans have been known to do for centuries, for the most part. And that is to open their doors to people from all over the world, make this place a unique melting pot. I mean, I know there are problems of all sorts that we have experienced along the way, but that general concept is most of all a favorable thing, and a lot of people have turned their back on it because they're afraid of the color of certain people, they're afraid of the religion of certain people, they're afraid of different ways, and somehow they think that their way, even though it's the majority and is not going anywhere anytime soon, somehow they think that's under threat by this kind of mix of different people. It's the most ignorant possible interpretation of that. It's an embarrassment to have somebody like that representing us in New York. Hopefully that stops soon, but my God. We need to do better.
I think it's also systems of inequality and the way we are already segregated. Sort of in ways that society's engineered historically, and also I think it is a misplaced blame, right? People suffering all kinds of tumult in education or housing or employment, whatever it
yes,
is,
yes.
and then. Needing to find an other, someone to blame.
Point to something that is bothering you right now. That's bad in your life. Is it health care? Is it losing a job? Is it not being able to afford your mortgage? Who do you want to blame? You want to blame undocumented immigrants? No, those are the wrong people to blame. They're not the ones responsible. Blame the people that are encouraging you to blame the undocumented immigrants, because likely they are the ones responsible for putting you in that state in the first place. Yeah, the Dow Jones. Wow, it's really high up. How's that affecting you? How's that changing your day-to-day life? I don't think it's doing much for it unless you're a stockbroker or you've invested in all kinds of different things. Doesn't affect your wages, doesn't affect your mortgage payment, doesn't affect the premiums on your health care or your deductibles or anything like that. None of that has anything to do with undocumented immigrants. If anything, they make our society so much better, so much more worthy of what this country supposedly stands for. And we need to get past this hatred and this ignorance and this prejudice. And with that, let us move into our Film Corner, I think is the name we settled on. And I forgot to print out the films that we saw in the last couple of weeks, so we're going to have to go by memory. You okay with that, Kyle?
Yes.
All right. I don't even remember what films we saw. We talked about West Side Story last week.
West Side?
Yeah. And the foreign film, which was Through a Glass Darkly from Ingmar Bergman, that was 1961. Those are films from 1961. So now we move to 1962. And the... I'm learning this as I'm reading. The film that we saw that was the Academy Award-winning film for that year was Lawrence of Arabia.
Lawrence.
That was a really good film. That was filmed so nicely. Mm-hmm. It was very long. Very long and quite an epic story. But it could have been filmed yesterday. That's how good it looked.
The print we saw was gorgeous, just stunning.
Yeah, they just really are doing with Blu-ray. They are doing amazing things.
The transfers and the mastering they're doing is incredible.
Uh-huh. This is the story. I didn't even know. This is how ignorant I am. I didn't know that Lawrence of Arabia was such a contemporary piece or story rather. I thought it was something that went back many centuries. But this is a guy who lived in the early 1900s and basically had a very interesting story with British military and the Middle East and all that.
He was kind of a miscreant, kind of a didn't fit well, but was in the military.
Yeah, yeah. He had a couple of kind of good catchphrases, like, it's going to be fun. When people told him, it's not going to be at all fun to go to this place and be amongst all these warring factions, because that's how Arabia was viewed at the time, of just nothing but warring factions. And he said, no, it's going to be fun. And I think he had fun. But it's interesting because the film opens when he's killed in a motorcycle accident. Now, I didn't know Lawrence of Arabia even had motorcycles in it, but yeah, like I said, it takes place in the early 20th century, so there's all kinds of things like that. There's World War I, elements of that. And you just learn a lot about how he interacted, how he led certain campaigns across the desert that was uncrossable, and invaded this vital town that the Turks were holding on to. A lot of people don't realize the extent of World War I and how Turkey was involved, how Australia was involved, and it's a real history lesson to experience that. The film goes on for a very long time. It's well over 3 hours long.
Lot of landscape, a lot of like wide and establishment shots, that kind of just wandering mirage and just beautiful desert.
That mirage shot was one of the best shots I think ever filmed at any time. It's basically Lawrence and a guide are traveling through the desert. They find a well, and then in the distance they just see this shimmer, and you can barely see it on the screen, and it just gets closer and closer and closer, and it's pretty much silence throughout as this gets closer, but it's such a mystery. You don't know what is approaching, you don't know who is approaching, and it's this shimmering feeling that is captured on film. It is just done so well. It is a joy to watch something like this and just experience it. And don't be intimidated by the 3.5 hour length.
It goes by quickly.
It really does. And there's an intermission too, which I really do appreciate.
I just want to quickly mention that there's some kind of precursors or foreshadowing. What am I searching for a word? Hint of the sort of early Bond, James Bond stuff.
A little bit.
You're getting into mid 60s, so again,
you're still in the early 60s.
Well, early 60s, but it's the color is there. vehicles, stuff like that is changing. Not a lot of that, given the desert, but military vehicles and stuff. But yeah, there's the theme and the sort of roots to Bond.
We've definitely crossed something because films are different now. They're mostly in color. There's a lot of contemporary culture. The Beatles are out now. You know, they started playing. And
exactly.
As you said, James Bond, I think one James Bond film has already come out.
Yeah, I think they're in production. So it's sort of this kinship, or you get a sense that is in the ether, like it's going on about the same time, and you get hints of it, or you could see where one or the other may have borrowed elements or even crew. I mean, you know, working on different projects.
And you start seeing familiar names, Peter O'Toole and Anthony Quinn, Anthony Quayle, the two Anthony Qs, and Alec Guinness. All kinds of famous actors are in these things now, and they all join up, and it really makes for a very interesting tale. We could talk about it for a long time, but unfortunately we don't have that much time. Foreign film for 1962, was Sundays and Sibel. Now, this was an interesting film, a French film, that tells a really different kind of a story about this guy who was involved in a Vietnam plane attack on civilians. And the film opens with him killing a young girl from his plane. And he's so traumatized by this, he loses part of his memory, and he becomes kind of catatonic in some ways. And he's basically being nursed back to health by this woman who's in love with him. But he wanders around. He likes to watch trains. And at one point he sees this father and her daughter. The father is dragging the daughter to an orphanage. It's not an orphanage. It's a place that nuns run.
Convent.
I guess a convent. But he has no intention of ever returning. And this guy kind of like overhears the whole thing and pieces it all together and develops this friendship with this girl and pretends, to the nuns at least, that he's her father so he can take her out on Sundays.
Yeah, he kind of gets mistaken, I believe, for the father. And the nun just kind of blithely says, yeah, you know, make sure she's back. She must be back by 7 or 9. And then
right.
He kind of just ends up walking. It's very kind of a happenstance of just all of a sudden they can just be free and go wander around the park because this father has abandoned this child there and he's just walking by and the girl mistakes him or otherwise goes with him, and the nun assumes that it's him picking her up for a weekend trip.
Can I just point out, I just noticed this, the person who does the music is the same person who did the music for Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes.
Maurice Jarre, who is the father of Jean-Michel Jarre, some of you might know, as an electronic musician. But this was a really kind of weird story because here he is, he's keeping this secret from his girlfriend, and various people in the community are seeing him hanging out with this young girl. She's kind of infatuated with him, saying, we'll get married when I'm 18. And I think she's, 12 or something at the point?
Yeah, she's, doing the math and all this.
But, you know, it's all kinds of alarm bells are going off. But in actuality, nothing really bad is happening. He's basically giving her something to look forward to, and she's helping him. But people suspect something is going on, and it leads to a tragic ending because people jump to conclusions. I think people would jump to conclusions a lot more quickly today. I don't think this film could even be made today because it just seems so inappropriate. But really, nothing inappropriate was going on. It just certainly seems that way. He was a very troubled person, and you could certainly see him as being somebody potentially dangerous. But when you look at it from the perspective of the film itself, no, he wasn't. He was very protective and loving.
And also the interesting thing about them, the dynamic, is the young girl actually, when you're kind of giving it a second look, and in some of the commentary, it's discussed that she actually has the power in this relationship.
Yes.
She's very much directing him. He's, as you said, disturbed, but kind of intellectually just not able to really direct things. He's sort of just looking for escape and very playful, and she's sort of directing this this her own sort of escape from this institution and from being abandoned.
All right, we have it's a great film though. I do recommend it. It's kind of lost. A lot of people don't know about it. You can find it online, but it's definitely different. Sundays and Sibel.
Black and white?
Black and white, yeah. A lot of the foreign films are still black and white, but the American ones are pretty much in color. Now, we move to 1963, and this is a film, it's actually a British film. A lot of this is the point where I think it's called the New Wave of Cinema, where a lot of British films get distributed by American companies. So you'll see a lot more, such as the James Bond type films, a lot more collaboration. And 1963 was a film called Tom Jones. I did not really care for this film. It just there's something about it. It's a period piece from the 1700s? Is that 16, when it's supposed to be? 1600s?
Yeah, 17th century, 1689 or whatever.
Okay, yeah, at some point I stopped caring. But it's basically a bunch of people with horses and you know, British aristocracy and aristocracy, right? And all kinds of, you know, feudal. Lusting after women. And it's a story about a baby, right, who's left on this aristocrat's bed and basically brought up as his son. And the adventures that he goes through, and it's kind of told in a whimsical fashion. Sometimes they break the fourth wall and talk to the camera, and basically there's a lot of kind of mixing up of relationships and mistaken intentions and things like that. It's a bit of fun if you like that kind of thing, but I found it just kind of tiring. What do you think, Kyle?
I agree. I don't know. It was reminded me of sort of some of the comedies like Princess Bride or Robin Hood parodies and these kinds of, it was very theatrical, seemed to borrow a little bit of stage, like comedy, sort of Shakespearean comedies or farce. I don't know what you would call them, but it was very sort of slapstick and overdone.
Yeah, it seemed very, very, conscious of itself, self-importance, I guess.
There's some weird shots, like interesting photography and illusions, and I think there was even some split-screen stuff. I don't know what.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
It was filmed well. I will say that it was filmed very creatively and imaginatively.
It was just color, by the way. Color.
It was color, very color. I just didn't like the story that much. I watched it. If I hated it so much, why did I watch it the second time? Because there was a director's cut, which really doesn't seem to be much, but a few edits that weren't made in the first version. I liked it better the second time I watched it because I could understand a little bit more what was going on. It just came very fast. And without closed captioning on, there's a lot you're going to miss.
Yeah, I would agree. Watching twice, a lot of these, I would just add, a lot of these we have watched multiple times just to ingest as much of what's going on, maybe after reading some synopsis or hearing a bit of commentary.
But here's a fun fact. The entertainer Tom Jones, who you probably heard of, the singer, got his name from this film. So I didn't know that. Albert Finney played Tom Jones. I believe Lynn Redgrave is in this, Vanessa Redgrave was the wife of the director, Tony Richardson. So you have all these relationships going on. So Tom Jones, that was the 1963 domestic winner of the Academy Award. And then that finally gets us to the foreign film, which you might have heard of, which was Fellini's 8½. This is obviously a classic. You've no doubt heard of 8½. And it's named 8½ because Fellini had made four full-length films, four short films, and collaborated on a film with somebody else. So that adds up to 8½. It's basically the self-referential study of what it's like to make a film. This guy has no idea what the film's going to be about. All these people are approaching him. It's a mishmash. If you've seen Fellini films, you know that there's all these crowd scenes where everybody's talking to different people, and it's kind of like chaos, but it's also kind of like order. Again, black and white, but really interesting to watch, but so much going on, so much behind everything. You have to watch this a whole lot of times to really get it.
Yeah, and it kind of, it's a little, it, there's some morphing of worlds. You realize this is like the thing he's writing or trying to create, and then there's these sort of meta situations where he's in an institution or at the bar or whatever, and it's like therapy and all this chaotic stuff's going around because this is sort of outside of producing or outside of the story. It's all these externalities that it takes to produce, to actually produce the story. So it's sort of hinting at the whole story of what it is to be a filmmaker. And I like the fashion. There's a interesting sort of early mod look and some interesting fashion choices. It's black and white as well. And you can see that it's sort of a precursor to some of the stuff from the 60s and 70s as far as that look. And
yeah, there's a film by Woody Allen called Stardust Memories, which reminds me a lot of this. So if you like that film, I think you'll really, really like 8.5. It's something I think everybody should see at some point. But don't expect to get it immediately. Don't expect to appreciate it immediately.
Yeah.
This is something that, kind of like Tom Jones, I didn't appreciate it as much, but I knew that it was worthy of more appreciation and more chances.
Yeah, I did not actually, I think, see this more than once. I might have, did we? I think, but I need to see it like three or four times.
Yeah, we only saw this once.
Yeah, but it's worth another look and maybe some analysis, reading up a bit, but very cool, very different.
Yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, that's going to bring us to an end because we had to race through those films. We are caught up now, at least. So next week we will be hopefully seeing more, and they'll be fresh on our minds. We are out of time. Finn is up next. It's Christmas Eve. I hope you have a happy Christmas. Can we say that? Or is the war on Christmas still going on? People keep saying, yeah, I put Christ back in Christmas. I wasn't aware he left. But, yes, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, all that kind of thing, Festivus, and Kwanzaa, and Hanukkah, and you name it.
Sorry about the phones. Didn't have time.
You know what? It's okay, because didn't even think about it. Just totally, you know, passed over. There could have been 10 calls coming in. I didn't even look at the phone.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what's your favorite Christmas carol, by the way?
I don't have one.
Oh, come on, you got to think of something. Just come up with a title, at least. I'll bet you I have it queued up.
Little Drummer Boy.
That's a good one, but I don't have that queued up. No, it's okay.
Feliz Navidad.
Yeah, no. All right. My favorite of all time is the classic Joy to the World. And I just hope people can sit back, no matter what your religious denomination, no matter what your beliefs, and enjoy the traditional rendition of Joy to the World. Good night.